Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Land Trap, A New History of the World's Oldest Asset by Mike Bird, examines why land, an asset that predates modern finance, still sits at the center of inequality, political power, and economic instability. Rather than treating property simply as a neutral store of wealth, the book frames land as a contested social technology shaped by law, conquest, taxation, credit, and planning. Bird traces how different societies have defined ownership, how states have used land to reward allies or fund themselves, and how private control over location can generate unearned gains when cities grow or infrastructure arrives. The narrative connects ancient and early modern land regimes to today's housing crises, rentier capitalism, and debates over zoning and development. In doing so, it offers readers a toolkit for understanding why land markets often behave differently from markets for ordinary goods, and why reform efforts repeatedly run into entrenched interests and institutional constraints. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, land as the root of power and hierarchy. A central theme is that land ownership has long been a mechanism for organizing society and allocating power. Unlike movable capital, land is fixed, scarce in desirable locations, and essential for food, shelter, and security. Bird's historical approach highlights how elites have used control over land to extract rents, enforce social status, and shape legal systems that protect their claims. The book situates landlordism, serfdom, and colonial land grabs on a continuum where property rules are designed as much by politics as by economics. By following how land titles, inheritance customs, and boundaries are created and enforced, the discussion shows that ownership is rarely just a private matter. It depends on state capacity, violence, and legitimacy. This perspective helps explain why land disputes are so persistent and emotionally charged, and why reforms can trigger intense backlash. It also clarifies how modern inequality is not only about wages or education, but about who controls appreciating locations. Readers come away with a clearer sense of how land becomes a lever that turns economic advantage into lasting political influence across generations. Secondly, how law turns dirt into an asset. The book emphasizes that land becomes a high-value asset not merely because it exists, but because legal and institutional systems make claims enforceable and tradable. Bird explores how property rights, registries, contracts, and courts convert physical space into something that can be bought, sold, pledged, and inherited with predictable outcomes. This legal infrastructure lowers transaction costs and attracts investment, but it also sets the terms of inclusion and exclusion. If titles are uncertain, markets stall. If titles are rigid and monopolized, markets can lock in privilege. The narrative links land law to state formation, showing how governments use surveys, cadasters, and taxation to map territory and raise revenue. At the same time, the book highlights the downside. Once land is fully financialized, its price can rise faster than incomes, turning shelter into a speculative asset. Understanding this transformation helps readers interpret why policies like zoning changes, mortgage rules, or tax incentives can move land values dramatically. The topic ultimately frames land as a product of institutions, meaning that outcomes are contingent and can be redesigned, though rarely without political conflict. Thirdly, urban growth, location rents, and the housing squeeze. Bird connects the history of land to modern city life, where the most painful consequences are often felt through housing costs. In growing urban economies, much of what people pay is not for the structure but for access to a location near jobs, schools, transit, and cultural life. As cities prosper, the community's collective activity and public investment can increase land values, creating location rents that accrue largely to owners rather than residents or workers rather than residents or workers. The book explains why this dynamic can intensify inequality even when the broader economy grows. It also sheds light on how planning rules, density limits, and neighborhood veto points can restrict supply in precisely the places where demand is strongest, further bidding up land prices. By putting housing debates into a longer historical frame, the discussion reveals recurring patterns: the clash between incumbent owners protecting asset values and newcomers seeking affordability, and the temptation for policymakers to treat housing as a private market issue rather than an institutional design problem. The reader gains a sharper understanding of why conventional solutions can disappoint, and why land, more than bricks and mortar, sits at the heart of the housing squeeze. Fourthly, land, finance, and the boom-bust cycle. Another important topic is the tight link between land markets and financial instability. Because land is widely used as collateral, rising land prices can expand credit, which then fuels further price increases, creating a feedback loop. Bird's historical lens illustrates how this pattern has appeared in many places and eras, helping readers see real estate booms as a structural feature rather than an occasional accident. When optimism spreads, lenders and borrowers treat ever higher prices as normal, and households can become highly leveraged simply to secure housing. The book highlights how this can leave economies vulnerable if prices stall or fall, balance sheets deteriorate, construction slows, consumption drops, and banks face losses. This dynamic explains why property downturns often feel more severe than declines in other assets. The topic also clarifies why policies that encourage homeownership through easy credit can have unintended consequences, especially when land supply is constrained. By tracing the relationship between land and money, the book equips readers to interpret headlines about interest rates, mortgage rules, and banking stress as part of a larger story about how the oldest asset continues to shape modern macroeconomics. Lastly, Paths to Reform, Taxation, Planning, and Fairer Shares of Land Value. The book engages with the enduring question of what societies can do about land-driven inequality and instability. Bird surveys, reform ideas that recur across history, better land taxation, limits on speculation, stronger tenant protections, and planning systems that align private incentives with public needs. A key concept is capturing some portion of land value increases that arise from public decisions and collective growth, rather than from the owner's improvements. This can take the form of property taxes, land value taxes, development charges, or mechanisms that fund infrastructure and affordable housing. The book also explores the political difficulty of reform, since existing owners often vote, lobby, and organize to protect gains that appear natural once prices have risen. Another strand concerns how planning and zoning can be structured to allow more homes where demand is high while still safeguarding health, safety, and environmental goals. Rather than presenting a single silver bullet, the discussion stresses trade-offs and implementation details, administrative capacity, transition rules, and legitimacy matter. The result is a realistic but constructive view of how land systems can be redesigned to produce more inclusive prosperity. In conclusion, this book suits readers who want to understand housing unaffordability, inequality, and the political economy of property beyond slogans. It will be valuable for general nonfiction readers, policy-minded professionals, journalists, students of economics or history, and anyone trying to make sense of why cities feel both wealthier and harder to live in. The main benefit is perspective. By seeing land as an institutional and historical construct, readers can better evaluate current debates over zoning, taxation, landlord power, and homeownership incentives. The book encourages a clear separation between productive investment and windfall gains from location, helping individuals interpret personal financial decisions and public policy proposals with more realism. It is worth buying compared to many similar books because it combines a long historical arc with direct relevance to today's land and housing tensions, keeping the focus on how rules, politics, and finance interact. Rather than treating property markets as purely technical, it explains why reform is difficult and what levers actually exist. That blend of narrative history and practical analytical framing makes it a durable guide for understanding the world's oldest asset. If you would like to support Mike Bird, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.